Once every 100 years, something happens in American society that transforms both our public and private lives, alters our futures, and upends the larger social order. We are in the middle of one of those moments now, according to our next guest. Not since women won the right to vote and not since they entered the workforce by the millions in the post-war years has there been a social revolution this big in America. In the coming decades, women will overtake men as primary breadwinners and become the most financially powerful generation of women in history. Liza Mundy has written the book The Richer Sex, How the New Majority of Female Breadwinners is Transforming Sex, Love, and Family. She calls this momentous shift the Big Flip, and her book explores ways it is changing the dating habits, sex lives, marriages, and home lives of men and women in America and around the world. Again, the name of the book is The Richer Sex. Liza Mundy, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
At what point did you start to notice that this was a story and a trend?
I'd say 5 or 6 years ago, you started reading about how women are in a majority on college and university campuses. Women now are about 50% of college students, and they're projected to rise to be 60%. So there's that education part of it. And increasingly, I was seeing, and my editor at Simon & Schuster was seeing, women out-earning their partners in greater and greater numbers. And so it felt like it was getting to sort of a tipping point level. And then when I looked at government statistics, and interestingly, the government tracks this, I saw that almost 40% of working wives now out-earn their partners. And that's a percentage that has been rising steadily since the 1980s when the government started tracking it. And if the rise just continues at the same pace that it has been, then we would be looking at in about 2030, more than 50% of working wives out-earning their husbands.
Out-earning your husbands is different than women earning the same as what men are earning in the same role, though, correct?
That's a very good point. There is still a gender wage gap. And so women earn 81% of what men earn. And so in a way, it's even more remarkable that this many wives are out-earning their husbands, given that women, by and large, are not earning as much as men.
What does that say about the workforce in general, that there is that disparity?
Well, when the government talks about a gender wage gap, they're looking at women in all professions and men in all professions working full time. So men still work slightly fewer hours per week than women. Women are still, by and large, in professions that that sometimes don't pay as much as traditionally men's fields. Although there's a lot of flipping going on right now, actually, in the workforce. I mean, women are infiltrating certain fields like psychology and veterinary medicine and even medicine in general and law to a certain extent. They're all becoming quote-unquote feminized. So we can look at the workforce and we can see pay disparities and we can see, you know, fields like CEOs where there's, you know, definitely an underrepresentation of women. But if you look more closely at changes that are happening, you'll see that women have really penetrated what used to be male-dominated fields and transformed them, really.
So as we look at this big flip, as you call it, is there a backlash at all coming from this?
Yes. Well, there can be a backlash. Do you mean in relationships or in society in general?
In society in general.
Well, it's interesting, you know, the controversy around contraception, for example, which took many people by surprise. It's interesting because economists have sat down and looked at this, and they have figured out that one of the reasons women began going to college in greater numbers in the 1980s and 90s, and even the 1970s before that, was because when the birth control pill came on the landscape and women knew that they could have a career that would be less likely to be interrupted by an unplanned pregnancy, suddenly there was an incentive for women to invest in their education and their professional future. And I mean, one paper has shown that about 25% of the narrowing of the gender wage gap is attributable to better contraception for women that allowed them to invest in themselves, and they responded to that incentive. So I think, you know, it may be no accident that we're hearing this conversation about birth control, because it has enabled women to, it's part of what has enabled women to actualize themselves professionally.
When you set out to talk to people and how it affected relationships between men and women, were you surprised by the results?
I was surprised. I was very interested. Well, one of the things that happens when you start talking about this is you realize that there were many, many women who had never talked about this. And even women in relationships where it is working out fine often don't talk about it, in part because they're afraid of stigmatizing their husbands. And so once you go out and start listening to people's stories, you realize that this is much more pervasive than people realize, and that it's really not being discussed. And I mean, I heard just, you know, a wide variety of stories, and some of them involved, you know, retaliation by a male partner who felt eclipsed and found ways to kind of try to make up for that at home, but also really inspirational stories of couples who were very mutually supportive of each other, men who were very supportive of their husbands' careers, and who were finding that that they now have a future with many more options, including the option to be a secondary earner or stay-at-home father, that weren't really available to men 30 or 40 years ago.
Do you find in talking to men that does it at all become a deal breaker in the sense of a relationship, that they don't want to be put in that position?
Well, yeah. I mean, I have a whole section of the story of the book called Backlash, and primarily talking to women about living with partners who felt eclipsed. A young woman in Texas who was a social worker, and her husband was in the same field, but she graduated a little bit ahead of him. Her salary was always a little bit ahead of his. And he said to her, you know, every time I got moved up a step, you got moved up a step. So she was always outpacing him just enough that it made him feel eclipsed. He started telling her that she wasn't attractive to him anymore. And ultimately, he left her for a woman who was a trainee in their office, and I guess a situation in which he could be the one who was always a step ahead. So certainly there were stories of that. But there were stories also of women who were able to disentangle themselves from unhappy relationships precisely because they now had the resources to do so. And you know, women have been in unhappy marriages before and been unable to leave them because of not having any earnings. And now that they do, it's something that economists call the independence effect, that, you know, at least you can leave now.
What did the men have to say?
Well, you know, many of the men that I talked to were in positions where they were quite happy to have options that had not been available to their fathers. I interviewed a family in Michigan where six adult siblings had been raised by a stay-at-home mom, a breadwinner dad who worked for Ford as an engineer, and then in adulthood they had flipped so that five of the six were in female earner households, and a number of these men had voluntarily stepped back from their own very demanding workforces because their father had not been able to spend time with them when they were young. And although they loved their father, they wanted more time with their children than he had been able to have. And we know that men want more time with their children and are spending more time with their children. And these guys, their workplace had been so unforgiving that they felt as though it was their only real option to, you know, quote-unquote opt out. And we talk sometime about, you know, women opting out when they become mothers, but these were men who really were very proud of their wives and were in marriages where they felt as though it was a team. So if their wife got a raise, it was like the team had gotten a raise, and were really essentially kind of the COOs and the CFOs of their households, you know, doing the budgeting, making the financial decisions. And so it still felt very much like a egalitarian relationship.
Mm. Well, that makes more sense to me. I mean, it seems to me that it doesn't have to be a contest, right? The woman earns what she earns, the man earns what he earns, you put it together, and that's what the household income is.
Exactly, right. And these were couples where they think of themselves as a family. And interestingly, I mean, the wives, when they talk about a provider, one wife specifically said, you know, that she had expanded the definition of provider to include what her husband does. You know, it's about providing not only financial resources, but providing nurturing and a happy household for their children. So her view of it was, you know, we're both providing. We're just providing slightly different things.
When you look at the men and women who are in that situation, I mean, we talk about the backlash, but ultimately, you think there will be benefits for both men and women in this?
Absolutely. I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer that it's a benefit for women to be economically empowered in their relationships and their marriages. And this is a pretty new thing for women. I mean, let's not forget that 150 years ago, women lost the right to own property or even their own wages when they got married. And of course, most women, did get married and had no real choice, but were disempowered and were disempowered in all sorts of other legal ways. I mean, they lost the custody to their children in divorce. And it's been a long road away from that. In my book, I quote the London Times when they were on the verge of giving women property rights in marriage. The Times wrote a thunderous editorial about how this would end marriage as society knew it. It would destroy marriage. Marriage should consist of authority on the one side and subordination on the other. And it wrote that if women were given even the right to their own earnings, what is to prevent them from going where they like? What is to prevent a wife from going where she likes and doing what she pleases? And the idea that, you know, and this was seen by the paper as a bad thing. So we've had, you know, more than a century of trying to get away from that mindset and get away from the mindset that a woman becomes an unpleasant, unloving wife if she has earnings of her own, which would also, I mean, that was the view in the 20s and 30s. So it's a very good thing for women to be empowered in their relationships economically. They get more bargaining power. But I think men now have an array of options that weren't available in the 1950s and 60s, where, you know, your whole identity came from your job and the idea of providing and sometimes being yoked to a job that you didn't want, because it was your duty to support a wife and family. I mean, the view in the 30s also was that men needed this as to keep them sort of on the straight and narrow. They needed to be providing for a family, otherwise they would run off the rails. And so I think, you know, men do have a new set of options, and that's a good thing. And many couples are going to trade back and forth, I think, on the breadwinning.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that and the effect that the economy has on this, because it would seem like it can be a very temporary situation.
It will be temporary. I mean, what we have now is a situation where women are on the verge of being 60% of college and university students, and we have an economy that is changing away from an industrial manufacturing-based economy that offered high-wage jobs to male high school graduates. I mean, that's going away, and we're moving toward the knowledge economy that favors college education. So women have put in the preparation to, I think, really prepare them for changes in the economy, and we do need to figure out a way, particularly in the working class, to get more young men into college. And that, if we can do that, then I think we'll have a world of trading back and forth.
The name of the book is The Richer Sex: How the New Majority of Female Breadwinners is Transforming Sex, Love, and Family. The book is published by Simon & Schuster. Liza Mundy, a pleasure. I thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, it's great to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book, The Richer Sex, published by Simon & Schuster. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.